Captain, we have something really, really important to tell you about. Captain, are you wearing Kevlar?
Now, gentlemen, we're not gonna sit here and pretend it's not a big-ass elephant in the room.
What the fuck is going on?
This is what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some shit here today, so why don't we just start the fucking podcast, hey? So they say February is the month of love, if it were. And one of the things that I've noticed about the month of love is that it really fucking sucks, because on Valentine's Day, the day that I know a couple people that fucking hate Valentine's Day, and Valentine's Day is one of the first, like, if you could give me a holiday that sums up why I hate these Hallmark bullshit holidays, it's Valentine's Day, just simply for the fact that a lot of the time, like, if you're on the outs, you know, and you're like, shit's gonna be like, I'm already done with this relationship, Valentine's Day is kind of like a testament to, like, how do I word this without sounding like an asshole? Valentine's Day is a test of, like, how much longer shit is gonna last here. And, yeah, that's ultimately when it ended up happening on my Valentine's Day. I was pretty much, on the outs, and I was like, you know what? This relationship is fucking done. This relationship is over with. I'm sick and tired of it. And instead of being a sad fucking panda, I'm sitting here hanging out with my boys, Mr. Blue Nibbles III and Helios, and we're just chillaxing. I've actually moved the computer into the main living room again, because I need to change my living room all the time. And I actually think the boys like it when I'm out by them constantly. Just simply for the fact that, like, they're right next to me. They get to be there with me. And I get to look directly at them when I make phone calls and I have conversations with them. And I think they're going to enjoy this setup more. It leaves my bedroom a little bit more open. And now that I've got all my stuff back, got a couple of things that I need room for. Like a 34-inch widescreen computer monitor that I really don't need. So here I am, living with it, and I've kind of known since December that the relationship was over and done with. She had two or three little things. She had two or three things about her that just really irked my chain. We were working on them. We were trying to get through them. And as much as I'd like to cast her out into society on this podcast, I'm not going to do that. Just simply because I got to be the bad guy in this one. I have to be. And it was really awesome, Sus, because I actually went to, so I was like, all right, I hit up the boys in a group text message chat, right? Gaio, Mark, and Eric. And I'm like, boys, I think it's over. I think it's done, skis. You know, and then I apparently forgot that I didn't tell Gaio, because I've been doing all this other shit out there. And he brought up a really good point when I had a phone conversation with him the other day. Like, I'm super producer. I'm doing the Evil Mark show. I'm doing my show. I'm now a supervisor at work. Like, I'm working really, really, really hard, which is kind of an understatement. Like, yeah, I thought I was going to be a little chillaxed. No, I'm not. But, yeah, buddy. Yeah. All right. I don't know how to start this, because I guess... yeah. So in my last podcast, I said I was going to get called out for it, and I did. I got called out for being an asshole. And, I guess I'm mad. That's just simply the answer. I am frustrated as fuck. I am very angry at a certain situation, and, for those of you who listened to the original unedited podcast, the quite a few of you that you did, I said some shit that I was just super angry about. I said some stuff that I was pretty upsetty spaghetti about, and as I had anticipated, I knew I was going to catch some flack for it, but I didn't know I would catch that much flack for it, and I did. I was given a tongue lashing that I deserved. a very well-deserved tongue lashing of why I am better than that. And I am. I guess I'm just frustrated with the events that have transpired. I'm frustrated at the circumstances that surrounded basically the entire event. The TLDR of the situation is this. There was a lot that was happening while I was dating Sarah. And what ended up transpiring is literally that as soon as I was to break up with Sarah, there were supposed to be a lot of positives. An older friend of mine who I'd chatted with a little bit said that she'd be a little bit more open to chatting me because she felt it was weird that I talked to her when we were dating. There's a whole shenanigans that happened before that. Like, I tried to date the friend. The friend told me that it totally wasn't a good place. I met Sarah. She tried to come back to me after Sarah and I got together. I told her we can't wait. And then, like, we were just, you know, the stupid flirty things that, you know, sometimes male and female friends do. And she's like, yeah, this is wrong. I was like, yeah, but it's never going to go anywhere. Nothing's ever going to happen. And then, she dropped out the face of the earth, asked me to tell her when I broke up with Sarah so she could, I guess, feel more comfortable talking to me. She's completely disappeared off the face of the earth. One of the other friends that I was talking to, she just completely up and disappeared. Like, everything was going fine. We were talking. We were having a great time just doing that stupid friend meme sharing, you know, sharing dumb things, asking dumb questions to each other. Like, if you had 3 weeks to survive on an island and you could only bring three things, but on day 22 you're getting picked up, you know, like, what would you bring and why would you bring it? And then, like, we were having these great in-depth conversations just talking the dumbest shit about video games and anything and everything underneath the sun. And then she just up and fucking disappeared. And then, you know, that my good friend who called me on the shit decided that they wanted to weigh in, and I got called on it and told me I was a bigger, better person than that, and that I should have just kept it to the TLDR of the TLDR is that Sarah was given the answers to a test and she continuously decided to fail that test. She was like the Patriots, right? She was like Bill Belichick, having the answers to everyone's plays, or, you know. She was basically told, this is your problem, and this is... Sarah would literally go, I have this problem with you. And I go, okay, this is how we solve the problem. And then she didn't want to... She was like, well, your answer is dumb. I'm like, well, what do you mean the answer is dumb? You're asking me... It's like this. When it comes to romance and intimacy, it was, hey, what do you like? Well, I like cheeseburgers. What kind of cheeseburgers? You just a good well-cooked, a well-done patty, you know, a little pink on the inside with a good cheese on top. What doesn't really matter what cheese. I mean, Munster, Pepper Jack, or Colby is fine. A nice couple slices of romaine lettuce, you know, just to kind of salt it out, and, you know, go ahead and maybe throw a tomato on there if you're feeling spicy enough. And she's like, well, here's your burger. I asked for, like, the cheeseburger. Like, you asked me what I wanted to order. I wanted to order the cheeseburger with lettuce, tomato, you know, lettuce, tomato, and onion, you know. Like, well, I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but I'll keep it short. But basically, she was like, what would you like to order for dinner? I want a cheeseburger with the works. And then she would just give me a cheeseburger, or maybe even a hamburger. And I kept giving her the answer to the test, and she kept failing it when it came to romance and intimacy, and I shouldn't have aired it out. I'm frustrated because I don't, like I said, like, everybody just kind of up and disappeared. And the few folks that I do talk to were asking me those questions. So I thought, fuck it. Let's air it out. Cause I do have a good group of friends, you know, Gaio, Eric, and Mark, and, you know, a couple of the guys from Let's Play Death Ray, as well as, you know, a couple of dudes that I talk with on Discord. And, you know, like, that's kind of what everybody was asking me. They were asking me for some of the more intimate details with the folks that I've gotten more into, you know, that have wanted to know about it. So I apologize if you did listen to it. I'm going to have this in place of that conversation. And I'm also going to just put this out as an extra, because I feel like I should be better, can be better. And I know what you're going to say, Mark, but you can go fuck yourself. I was called out on it. It's not Jared. It's not me. And as much as I want to drag Sarah through the fucking mud and not care, it's the correct thing to do.
And sometimes when you're pressured by somebody who's really, really close to you and who knows you really, really well and who tells you that that's not you when you're acting like a fool and you're acting like an idiot, you should shut the fuck up and man the fuck up and do the right thing. So I'm doing the right thing. I'm sorry I drug you through the mud, Sarah. I apologize. But still go fuck yourself for how you handled the breakup. I'm going to be petty. It's going to be about that. Fuck you for how you handled the breakup. Fuck you for everything that you did, especially with how hard I fought to stay. Fuck you for how you handled the breakup because of how I tried, how I handled the few issues that we had. The few moments and issues that we had, how I fought and how I paid attention and how I communicated and how I interacted with you during those times. And the best thing that you got is by going on, not even 24 hours, not even 24 hours after we break up, you're already back on a dating website. You can go fuck yourself. I mean, I was on there like a week and a half or two before I broke up with her, but I had been checked out basically since December. So I can be a little petty about stuff. I have the right to be. I was told I have the right to be. But as long as I'm not airing some super, super dirty laundry, there you go. So consider this my apology, non-apology. That I'm an asshole. And that I will try to do better. Really? Did I forget about that stuff? Did that shit not save? I could have swore that shit would have saved. Did that only save on my phone? Son of a bitch. Instacart, I don't want to spend that money. Fuck off. Alright. So there we go. I found the articles. Apparently when you save shit to your bookmarks tab. So I have this bookmark tab called podcast subjects to where I can talk about shit. And apparently if you save the podcast stuff to your phone, it only saves on your phone. Because if I look at my podcast subjects on my compooper, it's all the ones that I talked to about last week. But the sun.com, the US Sun, came out with a video entitled here. Let's see here. Healthy look. I'm 5'7", 187 pounds, and people say I look beautiful. I have a lot of muscle, and I swear, quote, bigger bones is a thing. So there's this woman who showed off her figure, and people are shocked that she weighs as much as she does. Megan Williams, a lifestyle content creator, responded to a challenge for her TikTok followers. She spun around gracefully in a circle and lifted her shirt, showing off her toned physique. Can any girl show me what 110 to 190 pound body looks like? An audio asked. 187 pounds, baby, Megan said, adding the hashtags, hashtag body positivity and hashtag fitness. So when we're looking here at, like, I'm looking at her picture and she's obviously sucking in her gut. I don't want to say sucking in, but she's obviously like trying to pose because like there's a screen grab of her where she's lifting up her shirt and you can kind of see her. I guess posing, if you will, because if that's how you standing actually looks there, Megan, I'm kind of concerned for you. You might have a little bit more of a pooch than you would like, especially with the camouflage spandex that you're wearing, which are actually really nice, by the way. But I remember Kathy. I don't want to throw out her last name because you could actually probably find her super, super easy. But Kathy was an ex-girlfriend of mine. She was Native American. She was Indian. I don't know what the proper fucking term for it is. But she was Native. I think she was Sioux. It was funny because like I dated her for six. This was the girl that showed up and we fucked within 5 minutes when I lived in South Dakota. But it was funny because like I remember coming over. I brought her home to my parents when I got discharged from the military. And it was funny because I was coming back home. She followed to live with me for like a week. And I ended up bringing her home. And bless my mom's heart, but she's like a fucking machine gun, right? So as like we're driving home, I'm like talking to her on the phone because she's following me in her car and she's following me in my Mustang and she's following, and we're driving home like, hey, Kathy, just kind of giving you a heads up here. My mom is like a 50 cal machine gun And she's a heavy gunner. And Kathy's like, what? What do you mean? I was like, you're going to notice this moment where my mom, she's going to have a question for you. And then it's going to be like when a heavy gunner sees a target of opportunity and just kind of goes, chick, chick, bra, 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 and it's just going to be shot after shot after shot after shot. They're going to be great questions. And she's doing it out of a place of love where she's trying to better understand you and learn who you are as a person and figure out what you're all about and get to know you. But it can be very, very rapid fire. It can be a lot of just like heavy, heavy questions. And it was funny because my mom hit her with, well, what tribe are you from? And Kathy looks over at me and goes, did I never tell you, Jared, what tribe I was? And I was like, I never cared to ask. Because she had such a unique name that I guess people would always make fun of it. And so it was my understanding that if I asked her a question about her nationality or her tribe, you know, that she would just be like, Jared, shut the fuck up. It's not that important. I was like, okay. So like, I never cared. I felt like she didn't, maybe she didn't want to talk about it or it wasn't that important to her, or it was just like, I'm a Caucasian male, you know, or like, I'm black, I'm African American, I'm Hispanic, I'm Asian. You know, it's not a defining. There was a Facebook reel that I saw yesterday where apparently Americans are the only ones that fucking care about being black, white, or whatever. You know, this guy's like, dude, I'm Haitian. Like, that's all I've ever known. And when I was filling out a survey for my school, I looked at my counselor and was like, I'm Haitian. That's not on here. And the woman's like, you're black, honey. And that's when I realized I was black and it's only in America. So I wonder if that's kind of, you know, how it was. It was never that big of a fucking deal for her. And so that's kind of where it rolled into play. And I forgot what I was talking about. You ever do that where you go, oh, that's right. The lifestyle influencer. I got to fucking Google that. Blue. Yeah, I've been at my new desk for 20 minutes and I've already got BlackBerry on my keyboard. Good job, fellas. Good job. Lifestyle influencer. What the fuck is what is it? Lifestyle influencer. Lifestyle influencer gives their online audience a behind the scenes look at their daily life. Almost anyone can be a lifestyle influencer. But the most successful posts tend to be relatable or aspirational content that others can implement on their own routine. Okay, so basically, you tell people how you live your life. Okay, that's cool. So, anywho's and whatsits. Kathy was 6 foot, 190 pounds, and she looked about as good as Megan Williams does. Let me go ahead and check out her TikTok. Hey, let me go ahead and check out her. Can we? No, that's TikTok. Let's just lifestyle content create. No, that's not. Can I just fucking? Why is it so hard? Just give me a link. Just give me a fucking link to her page, man. Megan Williams. Oh, there's an obituary. Life. Style Influ Megan Williams. There's a Sun article. Okay, let's take a look at her images. That's most definitely not her. You're definitely not at 187 pounds in that photo if that's you. It's not. No. The only fucking photograph that I can find about her is on her goddamn. Oh, credit TikTok, Megan Williams, the Z. Copy. Exit. Paste. Go. This is thrilling, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? I don't want to download the goddamn thing. I don't care to download it. Yep, I knew it. You got a little bit of a pooch. Got a little tiny bit of a pooch. And I'm not throwing it as shade. I am 100% not throwing it at shade. I'm 100% not throwing shade at her. Fuck off. Log into TikTok to get the full experience. Fuck off, TikTok. You're not getting my information. But yeah, like Kathy was like 180, 185, 190 pounds, and she was 6 foot. And like when you're 6 foot, and, you know, girls are, like, super in shape, super fit. And they're like, yeah, I'm, like, 160, 170. And you're like, you look like you're 120 pounds. It's just simply because muscle weighs more than fat. I remember in my fat kid class, there was a photo of 5 pounds of fat versus 5 pounds of muscle. And you're like, no wonder, like, you take a look at somebody who's like 180 pounds of fat versus 185 pounds of like muscle. And you're like, holy shit, you know, like they're kind of almost the, yeah, I guess you look skinnier. I don't know. I guess, yeah, muscle is more dense. There we go. That's the fucking word I was looking for. It's more dense. So, it, you know, of course you look smaller and skinnier, but yeah. I can 100% see that, you know, you're 187 pounds at like 6 foot, Megan. Like, you're not special. You're not special at all. Congratulations. Like, I love that influencer bullshit where they're like, oh my God, can you believe I'm actually 187 pounds? It's like, yeah, because you're fucking jacked, woman. Like, I'd say 150, but I'm probably 100% incorrect. Oh, is there an article here? Oh my God. My fucking, so, I know I'm getting like, I'm totally getting off topic here. But do you guys ever just go to your Google homepage and see like, hey, Google, what kind of articles do you have for me here? So I've got some football news because obviously I'm looking at football. Golfer Grace Charis and Tiny Crop Top says golf was meant to be. Olivia Dunn, sister celebrate LSU star's performance. But then there's a photo of a girl in a very tight suit. There's some DC stuff on there. Model makes millions making pancakes in her lingerie. Well, no shit. People are stupid. Yep. Wayne Gretzky's daughter embraced her inner Barbie with the boldest bikini. I'm going to go ahead and just open that in a new tab. Because Fallout player spends entire year constructing incredible city build. That's good. Gal Gadot in a shirt. Some news. The Last of Us. I tried an egg breakfast from Cracker Barrel. Waffle House. Oh, the winner? Okay. I thought there'd be more stuff here. Dude, so Mountain Dew is doing it again. Oh my God. So there's, I don't know if you guys pay attention to soda or not, but Mountain Dew, like, for each summer has been coming out with a couple different flavors. They had the, like, the blueberry slushy flavor. Like, they've had a couple ones, and now Mountain Dew is bringing out a new flavor for summer. The, you know, the red, white, and blue pops, the, yeah, a new Mountain Dew flavor is summer nostalgia you can sip. By the way, if you get a chance to try their, so shout out Eric from the File and Entertainment, my co-host there, as well as the NCAA Evil Mark show every Thursday. He actually, so I was a little nervous to try it, to be completely 100% honest. I was worried to try the fruitcake Mountain Dew flavor. It's not that bad. It's totally 100% not that bad. Called Fruitquake. It was really, really good. But Mountain Dew is coming out with the summer freeze flavor, which is the red, white, and blue pops that you could have. I gotta check. Okay, Mountain Dew flavors. Let's check out the Mountain Dew flavor archive. Holy shit. Mountain Dew's got a flavor fucking archive. Hey, we're, Livewire's really good. Yeah, Voltage. They came out with Mountain Dew Voltage, which was one of their summer flavors that was really, really good. And then they had, like, the Mountain Dew Freezer, whatever it was. Yeah, Frostbite. They had, where is it here? Because I know it's the, oh, this is the exact one that I wanted. So, yeah, I remember that they first came out with Mountain Dew Liberty Brew, which literally tasted like a strawberry slushy. Then they came out with Frostbite, which was really, really good, too. And it's kind of like their take on the blueberry. And then I know that they came, where was it? Then Voltage was really good. Pitch Black was actually excellent. So was their fruitcake. Their Livewire was really good. But it seems like every summer they come out with a new blueberry flavor. And I don't know if it's just because I'm a fucking chill. I think that's the word Mark taught me. A shill for blueberry. But yeah, like, it is absolutely gorgeous. I love the blueberry flavors. I love all of it. So to me, yeah, the new flavor that they're coming out with is great. But back to the original article that I was talking to you about, the Megan thing, and then going on the tangent of the weight. The fuck was I talking about? See, this is what happens when you decide to just do a random podcast randomly. And you have a topic that you want to talk about, but you don't want to. Oh, that's right. Hot women. Yeah, a lot of, like, my news articles that I, like, if I bet you any money if I go on fucking Facebook right now. Oh, my God. That's what I should have done. I should have screenshotted her profile so I could fucking make fun of it. But mine is no banger. My Facebook dating profile is fucking absolute trash. Okay, there's the Packers, bikini. Well, I'm saying bikini, but like, yeah. So there's the football article. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 articles about women wearing very revealing clothing. There's a local article, Jeopardy, video game, football. Okay. There's another tweet, probably something about a photo. South Park, Hogwarts. Why is baseball on there? You can fuck out of there. Women in good clothing. Oh, that's a good topic. I should talk about that. That literally just came out. Shaq took a sick day and got roasted by his inside the NBA colleagues. That's some horse shit. How about I save that article because I want to talk about that. That's fucking bullshit. Oh, Nevada's Moonlight Bunny Ranch. Sex, chaos, rock and roll scandals over the years. Oh, okay. I'd go to the Bunny Ranch if I could. I'd go there just to like. I know it sounds really dumb, but I'll talk about it in a second why I'd go to the Bunny Ranch. We'll leave that for a second here. But Marilyn Manson's accuser, Ashley Smithline, says her previous claims of sexual abuse against the rocker are false. This was an article written by People, by Rachel DeSantis. Ooh, DeSantis is not a popular name. The model who previously accused Marilyn Manson of sexual abuse in a since-dismissed lawsuit alleges she was manipulated by actress Evan Rachel Wood and others. 1 month after the lawsuit against Manson was dismissed, model Ashley Morgan Smithline has filed a sworn statement rescinding her sexual abuse allegations as she claims she was, quote, manipulated, end quote, into accusing the rocker of psychological, sexual, and physical abuse. Smithline filed the declaration in the Los Angeles Superior Court Thursday saying she was pressured by actress Evan Rachel Wood and others to go public with the accusations she now says are false. I succumbed to the pressure from Evan Rachel Wood and her associates to make accusations of rape and assault against Manson that were not true, end quote, she writes in a declaration which was obtained by People. Although People corroborated her story with multiple sources from our May 17, 2021 cover story, Smithline says she felt, quote, pressured, end quote, by her attorney to speak about her accusations in a press tour. The model claims she was, quote, repeatedly gaslit, end quote, by Wood and others, including Ashley Walters, a former assistant of Manson's, who sued him for sexual assault and battery in 2021. You should be fined, and there should be a massive penalty for you. I am probably now in a majority of this here, but there needs to be consequences for your actions. I have been the part of reap what you sow, and I have made mistakes in my past. I could have been royally fucked, worse than I was, but I was brutally open and honest, and I was given a chance at redemption. And for the last fucking I think it's been like a number of years, and I haven't fucked up again. I think I'm good to go. And you know, I think that Ashley Smithline, you need to be criminally charged for filing a fake accusation and basically going into it. I wish that Marilyn Manson would countersue you and basically take you for all you're worth, because I mean we've seen what it can do to actors and actresses. Like who was it? There's two very notable examples. One of the notable examples is Louis C.K. He's a famous comedian. I love his comedy. I think his comedy is fucking hilarious. And I'm glad that he's not completely 100% canceled, because his shit was basically kind of consensual. Like, who was it? who was the comedian that basically was like, yeah, I thought it was hilarious this shit, so I let him do it. And then, like, when he found out the accusations against him, like, you just kind of found out that, like, he asked, they were like, sure, I guess. And then, like, he did it, and they're like, oh, shit, really? Like, you were serious? Oh, okay, man, that's a little, I mean, yeah, I gave you consent, but go for it, bud. You know, as opposed to, like, what's going on with, you know, the guy from That 70s Show. But, like, when shit like this pops off, like, you need to seriously be drugged through the fucking mud. Like, you reap what you sow. Like, there are football players. There are people who cannot get hired anymore. There are men out there who basically get jailed because of these false accusations. And you're like, well, what the fuck? And, like, seriously, I feel like something needs to change here, where women who make false accusations need to be like, look, if this is true, great, we'll fucking fry Marilyn Manson, right? Or Marilyn Manson. But if it's incorrect, just know that we're going to come for everything that you have because it's fake. And I really hope that Marilyn Manson or just the county goes after her because, like, it's not true. It's 100% not true. But for the Nevada's Moonlit Bunny Ranch, I don't know if I'd actually. So when I get, like, I'm, yeah, like, these are great segue topics, aren't they? These are great segue topics into something else here. But for the Nevada's Moonlight Bunny Ranch, with you know, basically what it offers is, you know, girls in underwear and bikini and lingerie all day to base you pay to have sex with them. They are women of the night. I don't know if I'd actually have sex with them. I think a lot of what I would do is I would just, like, cuddle with them and be like, can I buy, like, an hour of your time, and then just cry or, like, just be held or feel wanted or needed or something like that. Cause, like, that's one thing. Like, I know I literally just got out of a relationship, like, a day ago, but, like, what I talked about, how the romance and the intimacy and a lot of things just weren't there with Sarah. Like, I remember one time I was like, hey, can I be a little spoon? And she's like, what? Why? I was like, because it feels really good. And I could use being a little spoon and to kind of feel warm and safe in your embrace. And she's like, no, I won't fit. It's dumb. And I was like, are you serious right now? Like, I'm asking to feel loved and accepted right now. And you're just like, no. Okay, I guess. All right. And, like, that's what I do. I'd be like, hey, can you be Big Spoon for a minute and just, like, hold me? Like, could I just put my head maybe in between your breasts? Like, you don't got to get naked. Just, like, wear something comfortable, wear, like, a sports bra or something, you know? And just, like, let me hold you for a minute. Like, I just want to feel loved and cared for and, like, reassured, you know, like, stroke my bald head. I'd shave it the day before. I'd get a little bit of shaving cream in there. You know, I'd make sure that it's a nice smooth head and not this bristly nonsense of 3 days worth of growth that I've got. But, like, can you, like, just tell me it's going to be okay and I'm going to be all right and I'm going to be fine. Like, that's all I really want to look for, is, like, just give me that love and nurturing and respect that I need. So, like, I mean, probably I'd go back the next day and be like, hey, can I get a blowjob? You know? But yeah, I'd like to do that. Like, I would, if there wasn't a very real chance that I could, like, I wonder too, like, I wonder if this has ever happened where, like, this dude's like rolling up to a street corner and like, hey, baby, what do you offer to? And she's like, you know, half and half for like 50 or da 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 da. And, you know, the guy's like, well, like, it's like a cop's thing. It's very obviously like a police woman or something like that. She's, you know, pretending to be a woman of the night. I feel like the word prostitute and whore are just totally dirty, but, like, I feel like it's a better term than, I don't know, like, you know, a streetwalker or a lady who is soliciting services and a guy just goes up to her and is like, hey, look, I know that you're probably out here trolling for sex and stuff, but, like, what does it cost for, like, an hour? It's like $100. And be like, all right, what if you just hold me? She's like, what? He's like, I'm really kind of lonely. I could really use just some cuddling. Like, could you be Big Spoon and I be a Little Spoon? Just stroke my hair and tell me I'm worth it. Tell me I'm okay. What would you do in that situation as a policewoman? You know, you're mic'd up. You got officers watching you and shit like that. What would you do? Like, Like, what would you do? Like, if I'm walking the streets, right? I'm doing a female prostitution sting, or like this gay guy comes up to me and he's like, "Hey, man, I know you probably are okay with sex, but what would you feel about just holding me and telling me that I'm worth it?" I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "I want to be a little spoon. Can you just like, you know, brush my hair, stroke my hair, just like cuddle me and tell me that I'm worth it, that I'm needed, that I'm loved, that I'm cared for?" I'd probably be like, "Well, I know we're set up in hotel 115. So let's go ahead and get room 114. I'm going to go get the key for it. Meet me over there. I'm going to go into 115 and be like, hey, I'm going to change real fast and I'm going to take off my mic and I'm probably going to do it. Like, I don't care if it's a gay guy. I don't care if it's a woman. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, if your profession is like purely romantic and like we fuck for money and then somebody is like, I just need to be held. $50, man. You know what? I'll get $50. And, you know, well, once you're feeling better, I'll let you get on your way. $50 and I'll let you get on your way. Okay. So that's probably what I like. I feel like as the police officer, I'd do it. Or the lady would be like, "Hey man, here's my number. Give me a call when I'm off shift. Cause I'm actually a cop. You could like, I kind of wonder what they would do in that situation, you know?" And like, I wonder, like, ask yourself this. If someone came up to you and was like, "Hey, Tony, hey, Mark, hey, Eric, hey, you know, Gaio, hey, whoever, you know, Sydney, Tiffany, Sarah, you know, what would you do in that situation? If someone's like, "Hey, man, like, I know that this is probably something weird and unusual, but would you cuddle me for, like, an hour or two, like, you know, stroke my hair, tell me I'm worth it, tell me I'm loved and cared for"? Not gonna lie, I'd probably hire you, you know, to make things right. I mean, I'd develop feelings, obviously. I'd 100% develop feelings and probably have to be like, "All right, you can't come over anymore." But yeah, like, I'd do it. What would you do? Let's see here. What was the other article that we had? There's some more football stuff. Yeah, like the further and further I actually scroll down, the articles and stuff like that. Oh, the guy who was Michael Mando. He's fired from the Apple series after a clash with co-stars. He was the guy that did Voss in Far Cry 3. Oh, arrest in cold case. Oh, that's Elon Musk in a cowboy hat. Totes my goats did not look like Elon Musk there. Okay, anyways. Did I have something else? I know I had another article that I was going to look at here. Open the new tab. Click on that. Go to... Whoa. Booking marks. Oh, that's right. I found this here. God, this website... Well, this website really thinks I like anime, even though I've been... Well, in my defense, a lot of my Amazon searches have been kind of some lewd stuff for, like, lewd posters and shit like that. But there was this quote that I found here today. Quote, "I think we are in the dark days of movie making," end quote. Superman director Richard Donner absolutely hated Henry Cavill's Man of Steel, blamed Zack Snyder for the deconstructing him into extremely realistic version. And... I know what he's getting at, but I want to offer this defense for Henry Cavill. When you watch a movie, one of the things that I like about being in a movie, or one of the things that I like about a character in a movie, is when I can 100% relate to you. Like, if I can start actually relating to you as an actor or as an actress or as just a person in a film, one of my biggest things is being able to go, "I understand that." And I really like, and I'm going to shill out for Henry Cavill here for just a second before I dive into these Reddit questions. But in my eyes, Henry Cavill's Man of Steel was one of the best Man of Steels I've ever seen. It was one of the best Superman movies I've ever seen. It was one of the most amazing Supermans one of the more amazing superhero movies I have seen out there. I really liked it for two reasons, and I guess we'll start from the beginning. Like, in the original, like, he, like, it's kind of a callback, right? It's kind of like a a call to his beginnings, his origins, like why he is the Man of Steel. I feel like it gives you enough background to kind of understand what is going on and to kind of understand, hey, like this is where he comes from. This is what he's about. This is who he is. And this is why he is. And he's almost humanized, because remember, Ma and Pa, Kent, literally raised him to be the good old country boy, right? You know, you don't raise your fist unless you need to. You don't do this. You don't do that. They raised him to be the true blue American man that he was. And you go back to that scene where, you know, Pa Kent, I guess, you know, basically is about to die from a tornado going through Kansas, right? Like he's everybody escapes, his foot gets stuck. I think there were better ways that they could have done his death like that because of the tornado. But I remember, you know, that like he's sitting there and he knows Clark can save him. He knows Clark can save him. Kal-El can save him. And he just goes, "It's okay. It's okay. The world is not ready for you right now. The world does not need its savior." And it was just, it was brilliant because Kal-El knew in that moment he could save them. He's been told his whole life not to do what he basically his entire life is like, dude, you gotta stop showing off these powers. People are gonna get word out and like it's gonna be bad news bears for you. And you know, like you need to stop being this super being until the world is ready to understand you and ready to take you in and be that person that we know you're going to become. And in that moment, he finally listens to his dad. He finally, like, he's like 21, right? He's like 16 to 21 years old. And, you know, he's that age of man. Like, I remember when I was like 21 and I was like, fuck, my parents were right. My stepdad, Gary, was right. My stepmom, Robin, was right. You know, my mom loved her to death, but fucking, she was right. And you had these moments of clarity, like as you're turning 18, 21, 25, 30, 35. And I'm sure at the age of 40, I'd be like, fuck, my mom was so right in so many of these situations. And I've had so many times come up where I'm just like, what would my mom do? What would my dad do? And in that moment, Jor-El, well, not Jor-El, Kal-El, is listening to Pa Kent, knowing full and well what he needs to do, what he can do, but instead he takes the high road and listens to his father, even though he knows his father is going to die. And in that moment, you feel that connection, because even though I probably didn't register at the moment in time that I was actually like watching it or I was there for it, I realized, you know, subconsciously that like, fuck, dad is telling him not to do it. He's actually listening for the first time and he knows what it means if he's exposed. And I was like, that's so dope. That's so dope. And then when he finds this, you know, when they're looking at the ship, he gets a notion he's using his powers. You know, when he shows off like how brilliantly strong he is as he's working his way to do what he needs to do, as he's listening in to the Canadians talk about the outer space thing, and he's like, that could be me. He gets a job there, he's floating around, you know, and then he finds that suit, the Superman suit, which I think the costume designers did such a brilliant job. It's not this bright, vibrant blue. It's more of a subdued dark, you know, blue with a dark blood red that represents how grim the DC universe is. This is not, you know, the bright shining, because like if you take a look at the comics and you read a lot of the comics out there, you're like, holy fuck, you know, like for how bright and brilliant the world can be, like it's pretty fucking dark, man. Like it can get pretty fucking dark out there. You know, and you're like having a lot of these world ending events or these like, you know, city shattering events that you maybe, you know, these brightly colors and you're making it seem beautiful. It's maybe not as beautiful as you think it is. And, you know, he saves Lois Lane. And then, of course, Lois Lane has got to fucking find, like, you know, of course, he's like, this is gonna fucking hurt, but I'm going to save you. And like, he's butting into the man that Pa Kent wanted him to be, and he finds out about Jor-El and Jar-El, his dad, and of course, it's Russell fucking Crowe being a badass motherfucker on his planet. And I love how, even though, you know, they give this notion where you're like, well, these are super people, they can fly around and blah 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 blah, and within the first couple of minutes, they explain it so beautifully as to why Superman is going to just be amazing on this Earth planet, and why they haven't reached out to the Earth planet because they overexpanded, and by the time they found this beautiful planet and da-da-da-da-da, like, within the first couple of minutes of this series, you find out why they're amazing on all these things, and it tells such a big, dense, long, it gives you a beautiful TLDR. Wow. That was a good one. I apologize. I was going to pause it, but then it just came right up. But it gives you this beautiful TLDR about everything in the world, and you're like, fuck me, man. That's so dope. And it sets the tone, and it sets the precedence, and, you know, the next movie that he's in, you know, it sets this whole just kind of, like, idea of everything. And then, yeah, Batman v Superman, like, they could have done some other dumb shit. Like, there was, like, work it, and then, like, you know, it was like a beautiful story told where he's like, I can't, like, and that's why I like Superman so much, is because it's like, what are you gonna do to Superman, like, right? Like, how are you gonna figure out, like, how are you gonna affect this Man of Steel? And Lex Luthor plays it so brilliantly where he's like, kill the Batman, and he's like, no, Lex, you're coming with me. And he's like, oh, am I? I'm sure Miss Lane would love to tell you not to do that, because I'm a killer. And he's like, kind of like, whatever about it. And Lex is just like, I know she's your girlfriend. I know who the fuck you are, big guy. I'm not gonna tell the world if you kill Batman, you know. And I love that about it, where, like, he just, and he finds out that, like, he can actually be threatened. And again, it makes, like, how do you threaten a god, right? Like, and it brings, and then all of a sudden, he's no longer, there's just his ultimate being. He is a superhero, yes, but he's a superhero that can get fucked with. Because if it's just this omnipotent, always everything, amazingness, the fuck is, like, how do you fuck with this man, right? Like, how do you fuck with him? And in my eyes, Snyder did a good job of humanizing him and bringing Superman to down to Earth. And I get that he's supposed to be this omnipotent, awesome person, but, like, how do you, like, when you read a comic and you're watching a story, you're being told a story, there's got to be the beginning, the middle, and the end. You got to have the introduction to where your superheroes are at. You got to have your storyline. You got to have the middle where there's some sort of arc, there's some sort of peril, there's something that your main co-stars have to get through. You have to go through this thing to have this story be told, to make you feel threatened and to be like, oh my God, is it going to be done? And then you have your ending. Now, is the ending going to be good? Is it going to be bad? You know, and like, the death of Superman, like, Superman in this universe is dead. And then, of course, they bring him back through a very odd way. And then, of course, like, you won't let me live. You won't let me die. What do you want from me, Bruce? You know, I'm going to fucking, and he's like, well, let me explain to you. I brought you back because there's no way that we could stop the world from ending. And we need you, big guy. And then he's like, I am a big, omnipotent, awesome being. And then you see that he's fallible, right? Because he comes back with this badass gray and this black and silver suit. And the black and silver suit is overdone, you know, obviously. But, like, it's just so dope where he's just like, you can't fuck with me, big guy. Like, what did you expect? And then they do it wrong. And, of course, the savior is Ezra Miller, a.k.a. The Flash, who is a fucking psychopath in the real world. But I guess it's okay because that's what The Flash is. But, you know, like, it's so cool because when you humanize these omnipotent, amazing people, you're just like, well, shit. You know, like, this god can fuck up and so can I. And it makes the characters more relatable. It brings them down to, it's not just constant succession and you constantly succeed and you're constantly, like, there's no more peril anymore. It's just like, oh, there's somebody, you know, the aliens are invading Earth, and then Superman just blat, and like, no, you're all dead. Congratulations, the mothership is blown up, everyone's fucked. You're good to go back to your lives, everybody.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get Gotham Industries to clean it up so Bruce Wayne can spend a lot more money. He can make people happy. And, you know, Batman and the trust, you know, the Justice League fund will take care of it. And so, like, it's so funny because you have to have some sort of peril. And I like that Snyder's peril is let's humanize these superheroes. And I'm a fan of Henry Cavill. He seems to play the characters so true to a lot of the different, like, he'll find that one comic that he can take and he can go, this is how I can play it very well. So let's do that. And Snyder was like, sure, go for it, big guy. And I like how he fought. He's like, no, Superman had chest hair in this one obscure comic. I'm going to have chest hair. And Snyder's like, oh, okay, good call. You know, or like The Witcher, you know, when he was on The Witcher, he's like, no, this is how it would be played. And they're like, okay. So I do truly like how they do that and how they did that, you know, where Henry Cavill is sticking true to the characters. And I think that's why I like Tom Hardy so much. And that's why I like Liam Neeson, because they play these characters so, so well. And, there's a couple of female actresses out there that I'll throw out, but I have this thing against female superheroes and stuff like that. I don't want to sound super misogynistic. I don't want to do that. I don't want to get into a little pipe hole, a little rabbit hole out there, because I will, and it'll get dark, and maybe I'll save that for Mark, so I can be like, oh, I was goaded by Mark, ha ha ha. So yeah. So there's this subreddit called Dad for a Minute where, like, people go to this subreddit for various things, right? I should probably take stock of when this is happening, because I kind of want to, we are 1 hour, we're basically 1 hour in. Okay, so I'll just go ahead and go 60 minutes. So there's this subreddit, you know what? God damn it, I forgot.
Advice.
Yeah, I forgot to do that. That's this section of the podcast. So there's this subreddit out there called Dad for a Minute. And I like answering some of those questions. I used to do this thing where you could leave like a voicemail. Like a minute long voicemail or something like that, like a minute long audio message, and then you could like tag people in it. And I thought it came a little bit better across than just putting words on a text. So I wanted to. I remember seeing this earlier today, and I wanted to respond to it. And said, other dads, why is the world so unfair? I miss my dad, and he isn't even gone. My dad is MS. That's the story. I love him to death. We had the same humor, the same laugh, the same eyes, but I feel like I was robbed of my dad. He's still the same, but I can't experience what other kids do with their dads. It hurts to talk about because I've never said this to him because it would break him, but sometimes I wish I could do what other daughters do with their dad. I just got engaged, congratulations, and in our wedding planning, my fiance said, quote, out of solidarity to you, I won't dance with my mom at the wedding, end quote. And I realized that I can't even dance with my dad at my own wedding. My dad was sick and impacted by the time I was 12. I see videos of dads online all the time, and I'm just so jealous. I love my dad, but I feel like I was robbed, and then I feel hurt all over again because it doesn't mean I don't love my dad, I just wish it was different. I've never written down these thoughts before, but here they are. Now, what I want to say to you, daughter, I guess if you will, is life is just cruel. Life is not fair. I mean, if you look at the world and you're a Christian, maybe this is hell, right? Maybe this is hell, and maybe we have to survive, you know, our 60, our 20, 40, 60, 80 years in hell is just what we deserve. And maybe the length of time that somebody lives on this planet just basically means that, you know, we're here for as long as we need to be sentenced in hell. And because of the way that humans age and the way that humans, you know, our longevity and the way that time, you know, is very, very slowed down. Sometimes it can feel like a massive eternity, and you could view this as hell. And our punishment is this for whatever reason. And that's one way that you could look at it. Other ways that you could look at it is that in the, In the grand scheme of the universe, the fact that you are alive is a statistical anomaly. The fact that you came out with blonde hair, blue eyes, you know, black hair, red eyes, whatever combination of chromosomes you have to be the genetic makeup that you are in your DNA is a genetic, it's a statistic anomaly that you just happen to coexist. And Mother Nature is pure chaos and evil. I mean, you take a look at a lot of the species that are out there. You take a look at the way that Mother Nature does things. The strong survive and the weak perish. And something about your father's bloodline basically made him susceptible to MS. And she's, to take a line from World War Z, the movie, she's a cold bitch. Mother Nature is a cold, uncaring cunt. And there will be subtleties about her weaknesses, but her weaknesses look a lot like her strengths. And she, you know, whether you want to call it fate or whether you want to call it luck or you want to call it what have you, you were dealt the hand that you were dealt with. And there's not much that you can do out there other than to just continue to live and thrive and to continue on with your existence and make the most of it. So what, you can't have your dance with your dad? I guarantee you there are so many other people out there who don't have fathers right now that they can tell that they got engaged. There are so many other, you know, people whose fathers are maybe serving in the military and they can't have that dance. Just because you can't have a father-daughter dance, make it special. Ask your dad, you know, tell him you got engaged. Let him know that you got engaged. Ask him if there's something that that you and him could do that would replace the father-daughter dance. Because now you get to set a trend. Now you get to make things real special, because you could be the first people to go and do the father-daughter DJ, right? You're going to hire a DJ. Everybody hires a DJ. So instead of the father-daughter dance, like, I'd like to bring up my dad, and in lieu of a father-daughter dance, we're going to play our favorite song here, and we're going to DJ a little bit for you, right? And, like, you could maybe find a mashup, like when Metallica and Fergie, you know, had the mashup of Oh Shit, you know, and Enter Sandman, or It Was Sad But True. Or you could maybe find something that you and your dad could do together that would make it special. Don't look at this as an obstacle or a bad thing to overcome. Take a look at this as something that you could maybe enhance a wedding or make it better or make it more special to you guys. Because, like, how fucking dumb is that? You know, like, you know, everybody, they get down on one knee, they open the thing, and they're like, will you marry me? And or like, you know, you come out with your wedding ring and you're bubbly at a fancy restaurant. You know, you go to your favorite park, you go to Disney World, you get down. Like, don't do that stupid bullshit that you do, right? Fucking be creative, be nuanced, be something special. This gives you the opportunity to flex your creativity and flex your muscles. You know, your brain is technically a muscle, and for all intents and purposes of this conversation, find something that you and your dad could do to make it more special. Because the world is cruel, but we're fucking smart. We are fucking geniuses. And we can come up with some more amazing things than you could probably ever imagine. So don't look at this as such a negative, and don't look at it as something that you didn't get to have or that you're missing out on things. Think of all the cool things you did because your dad does have MS. Think of all the cool little things that you maybe got to experience because of your father's condition that other people would never know about. You probably are more hardy than so many other people out there, to where they have this little hiccup and you're like, dude, my dad and I did that when we were five. And see, this is that cool little workaround that you could do for, you know, and like you could show the world, you could be a leader, you could do so many more things. Your dad having MS is not a bad thing, is what I'm trying to say. It's an adventure. And I know it sounds dumb, and I know what I'm trying to portray to you here is probably not something that you're thinking of. But, like, my dad was an alcoholic. Like, hardcore alcoholic. He was the man that said he would quit smoking and drinking, and 24 hours later, he'd be on his fourth gin and coke. Jack and Coke, and he'd be on his fifth cigarette of the afternoon, you know. And I grew up in a bar. I learned a lot about bar. I learned how to take drunk people's money, you know, in pool, because my dad was a pool shark. I learned the hustle. I learned a lot of things that I as a child under the age of 16 probably shouldn't be aware of. You know, there are so many things that I learned in that bar that I've actually been able to apply to my life when I was in the cop as a military police for the chair force out there, that I got to experience, and that without having those experiences as a child and being able to understand and curtail and doing a lot of things, I've actually turned those negatives into positives. Like, I can tell when somebody's getting a little too drunk. And I can kind of tell when things are going to get a little rowdy, and I can just dip easily. I can tell when somebody's inebriated and I no longer want to be with them, or I want to do something with them. So you can take these negative experiences that you've had and turn them into positives with your life, and flex that creative muscle of yours. Just absolutely flex the creative muscle of yours. And I know it's so dumb. It's so cliche. Why is the world so unfair? The world is so unfair because if it was all pigtails and roses, everybody would have the perfect wife, husband, girlfriend, and everything, and it would be amazing. So the world is unfair because we all have to live our own ways, and it gives us the ability to actually learn that, well, you know what? Some things aren't going to be kind, and we have to be strong. We have to be able to live our lives and create positives from negatives. And I think that's what you're looking for. Is right now you're going through a struggle, and if this is in any semblance of a positive here for you, just remember, take the negatives, push them aside, and think of all the positives that you've come from it. Think of all the cool different ways that you could do something different instead of a father-daughter dance. And let your husband, let your wife, let your significant other have the, you know, the son daughter, the dancer or whatever it is. Because I'm not supposed to assume the gender or whatever, even though I just read it and I clicked off of it, but I would 100% just tell you that, like, do me a favor, just think positively, find the positives in it. And you'll see it was much more of a positive than a negative. I probably should have saved that. I probably 100% should have saved that. I did upvote it though, so that'll be easy to find. Let's go ahead and find something on Reddit. Let's find an Ask Reddit question, shall we? Here's a damn good question. If you suddenly became a billionaire, what is the first thing that you would buy? There's a house that I'm pretty sure is no longer for sale, but there's a couple houses that I would actually really, really like to live in, and that's one of the first things that I would do. I would actually buy a house. There's a couple houses in town here in the city that I live in, because I'm still thinking of moving cities. Hey, there may very well be a time that comes that I get to move up to the city that I wanted to live in. I feel like I might have a little bit more luck in the dating scene now that I am single. I'm around something like it. I feel like if I moved up to this place, I'd have maybe a little bit better life. But now that I'm no longer attached, I might want to move somewhere where it's nice and dry. Somewhere where the temperature, you know, barely gets below 65, so I could take you lunatics out all the time. And during fall time frame, I could hang out with Helios and Blue. And I think, you know, if I suddenly became a billionaire, the very first thing that I would do is I'd probably find a home that's for sale in and around Phoenix or Nevada. I think he lives in Tucson, or he lives, yeah, so I've got, Guile lives down in Las Vegas, basically. For all intents and purposes, it's Vegas, and then Mark lives in Reno, Mark lives in Tucson or Phoenix, I think. All I know is that he's close enough to where he can drive to the Cardinals Stadium, is what he said. And then Eric lives in Illinois because he's a piece of shit.
can't believe he lives in that shitty ass state. But I think the first thing that I would do is I'd buy a house down in Nevada or in Phoenix, where the weather is really, really nice and I don't have to worry too much about anything. And then what I'd do is I'd load up a moving van. I'd hitch everything up that I wanted to take with me. Probably sell everything for like stupid cheap too. And keep only the things that I wanted to keep. And then hitch everything up to a U-Haul. Put everything in my U-Haul trailer. Put the Jeep on the back of it. And then just start a big-ass drive on down to my new home. And then and go from there. And then I know it was like just what would you buy if it was the first, you know, if you suddenly became first thing. But that's kind of a shitty question. The second thing that I would do is as soon as I bought everything, I would, I think they're called rotating CDs is what they're called. But basically, like, you put a bunch of money into it, and then, like, it can be, like, a 3, 6, 9 month, like, it could be a certain period of time that it just basically gains a fuck ton of interest, and then it pays out the interest. I'd probably put, like, 50 million into 50 to, yeah, I'd probably put, like, 50 million into rotating CDs. Because what would that be? So that'd be 100. So yeah, that'd be $600 million into a rotating CD. Into rotating CDs. And then I could just basically live off of that interest for the rest of my life. So yeah, like I could probably buy a home for probably around like, I'd live on the outskirts of like the towns and shit like that where you could. Cause yeah, it's 600. No. Well, maybe not 50 million, but like, yeah, million. Yeah, cause what was the fucking question? If you suddenly became a billionaire, like I guess it would depend on how many billions I was a billionaire. Like if it was like 999 billion, if it was 500 billion, what if it was just 1 billion? You know, that's 999 million with an extra to spare. And so I mean $300 million could actually buy me a pretty decent home, or at least help me put a chunk down on it. And then yeah, the interest would be insane on that. But that's probably what it would be, is that I'd put all the money into rotating CDs, and then that way I could get paid out to basically just exist and live, and that way each and every single year, I mean, what the fuck would the interest be on those? Wow. So, yeah, that charges a lot faster doing that. Let's take a quick look here. So, 50, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, times 0.01. So, even, wow, $500,000. So, if I was given a 1% interest rate on $50 million... That'd be five. So yeah, if it paid out 1% if I got 1% interest on $50 million, it would be $500,000 for that. Yeah, an entire year's worth of if they gave me a 1% interest after 1 year of having the CD open, that'd be $500,000. Wow, really? 1, 2, 3. 100,000 million times 0.01. Yeah, so like I could actually essentially just put 20, like 2 million into a rotating CD. If it paid out like 1% interest of 2 million is 20,000. Like that 20, you don't need 20,000 a month to live off of. You really fucking don't. You really don't. But yeah, okay. So fucking put 2 million in. 1% interest over an entire year is 20. Yeah, fucking there you go. 20 million, and then I could probably just buy a house outright and make the move and have enough money left over to just kind of wait for the interest to kick in and shit like that. Or even just get a mortgage, right? Just put down a decent chunk of money so that way I have a mortgage, and then just have a nice mortgage payment to increase my credit. And there you go. Brand new house somewhere else. Hi, Blue. What are we up to? Yeah. The third thing that I'd buy is a brand new, like, decked out PC. I'd literally just find the most expensive PC I could build and then just fucking click order and send me like 3 of them. And then just send one to Gaio, send one to Eric, so those assholes don't have to use Macs anymore. And Eric doesn't have to use that laptop that he's got. And then I'd use the PC I got right now as a streaming computer and stuff. What are you chewing on my, bud? You chew on my camera? And then, of course, I'd build a giant dome in the back of my property for these Goombas to live in and be kind of like a fenced in, caged in area to where they could just fly around in my backyard and have a ton of fun. That'd be fun for you, huh? So yeah, anyways, that's a damn good question, Reddit. That's a damn good question. Found another good question. My friend found out her boyfriend is on Tinder, but is skeptical it's him. What can I do to help her? That's a fucking wall of text. Holy shit. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 paragraphs of information. I don't need 7 paragraphs of information when it says my friend found out her boyfriend is on Tinder, but is skeptical it's him. What can I do to help her? Fuck it. Super simple, super easy. Basically, create a Tinder profile. When you are near him, make a Tinder profile, right? Make like a gorgeous Tinder profile and then swipe right on him. And essentially with, use fake photos, go the whole 9 yards and shit like that. And then, basically swipe right on him. And then have like a cool little conversation. Just be like, hey, I'm not really looking for a relationship. I'm looking to fuck and I would love to fuck tonight or tomorrow. Can I get your phone number so I can call you? I'd love to hook up. I don't want to continue talking through Tinder. I'd like to just hook up. What's your number? And then if it gives you your boyfriend's phone number, bada bing, bada boom, you're done. Yeah, just create a fucking fake Tinder profile because obviously he's going to lie. You know, set your location to where you're going to be able to find him. In fact, so this is how you probably find it. So basically what you would do is you'd set your Tinder profile to only search for like 5 to 10 miles within your radius and then set your location to where he's at, like his home, where he's probably going to be swiping a lot, where he probably set his home Tinder at, set your radius to like 5 miles from there and then just slowly go through the Tinder profiles. And then once you find him, you know, check off and be like, hey, I'm new to town, blah, 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 blah. So that way you have very limited matches that are going to be right within the area and fucking go from there. I absolutely guarantee if your friend's boyfriend is on there and then, best friend, did you make a Tinder? No. Why? Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. We made a Tinder as a joke. When? Last year. I updated it yesterday. We just used it when we were bored. I'll delete it now. Fucking your boyfriend's a fucking idiot. He already told you he's on Tinder. Your friend is an idiot. Your friend is absolutely an idiot. Your friend's boyfriend's playing in her hardcore. He's already checked out the relationship, or he's trying to find some pussy on the side, so he has it all together. So you need to tell your friend that she's a fucking retard and that she needs to break up with him immediately. Immediately. This is another good question. Older married people, how do you find a good partner? Fuck. I'm 23, turning 24 in April. Oh, nice. Are you a girl? Let's date. I'm excited for it being, my parents gave me their old house. I'm excited for it being finished, being fixed up at the end of March. I have an okay car and a decent job, and I want to start a family one day. However, it seems hard to find the right girl. The last 2 girls I've been with involved hasn't worked out. Dude, I'm 30 fucking 5, brother. I'm 35, and I don't have this shit worked out at all. Like, at all, at all. Like, I dated a girl who I thought was dope as fuck. And she is very much not dope as fuck. Because she checked a lot of the boxes. Just not my box. You know, she didn't check off all the boxes. So, yeah. Older married people. I mean, I was married when I was actually 21 to 23. So, I guess maybe that counts. I guess I'm technically an older person who's been married. But yeah, good luck, brother. It's not gonna help to be completely open and candid and honest with you. Fucking bro, you're in it for a long haul here, my man. There's not a whole heck of a lot that you can do. You basically have to just luck into a situation. I've had women who have checked most of the boxes
the vast majority of the boxes, almost none of the boxes, and I'm still 35 and single and on the prowl here. So I mean, to be completely candid and open and honest with you, it's not the advice is going to be the exact same here. It's basically just good luck. That's what it is. It's good luck, brother. It's good luck, homie. It's good luck. Oh, and then one good one here. One good one. How to tell if you're working out wrong or just pathetic? I often feel sick and sore, especially in my neck, and being inactive makes it worse. I've been trying to get into a routine of doing this starter body weight fitness stuff about 3 days in, I get sick and give up. I used to be able to do 4+ hour walks, but that has dropped completely since COVID. I can barely do 2 hours without basically getting nothing else done the rest of the day and feel like a waste of time. I've gone to the doctor and he's basically called me a hypochondriac since none of the tests have shown anything. I love this beekeeper here. It's like, sounds like you have long COVID and your doctor is clueless. Just take it easy until you feel better. Dude, to be honest with you, like I did that. Like I'm now feeling like that. Like I'm pretty sure I had COVID at one point in time or the other. It's never been proven. Cause a lot of times, the few times I did get tested, they were like, no, you're fine. You don't have COVID. Maybe it was just like prolonged flu, but like, honestly, this whole pandemic is kind of like gone one of two ways. Either people have become super sedentary or they've essentially just become, you know, super, super active out there. And I completely and 100% honestly feel like I almost feel kind of like you're in that very sedentary lifestyle. You were no longer active and you're trying to get back into it. If you're getting sick, you're pushing your body too far. As much as I love my sergeants and everybody else in the military, they're like, you're not doing it right unless you're puking. No, that means you're just pushing your body to the limits, right? And like, if you're okay with that, fine. By all means, go ahead and push your body to the limits. But in most cases, if you're getting to the point where you're physically becoming ill, you're pushing your body maybe a little too hard, a little too far on things, and you need to back off. So instead of 10 reps of 5, maybe do, you know, 5 reps of 5. And once 5 reps of 5 becomes too easy, then you bump up to 7 reps of 5, and then 9, and then so on and so forth. You slowly build to where you're at. You know, if you can only do a 2-hour walk for the day and that fucking kills you, dude, do an hour walk, right? Do an hour walk and be like, okay, an hour's not so bad anymore. Like I still feel super, super energized after an hour. Okay. Then bump it up to 2. Get to the point where the 2-hour walk is something that you're like, dude, I still feel super energized. Okay, bump it up to 3. You know, do these slow increases. You don't just start off doing 80 push-ups in a day. No, you start off with 5 in the morning, 5 at night, 10 in the morning, 10 at night, and you slowly build up your tolerances, because if you go too hard too fast, you're going to get discouraged. You know, working out, I say this in my sales pitches all the time for the stuff that I sell. It's not a race. It's not a sprint. It's a slow race. You don't do 6 sit-ups in a minute. You don't do 6 sit-ups in a day, and then magically you get 6-pack abs, right? You got to do 6 sit-ups a day every day until, you know, the year is over, and then by the end of the year, everything is beautiful and perfect out there. So that's the biggest thing that I would say, is it's not a marathon. Hey, it's something that you do nice and slowly to get built up and to get there even Stevens and everything else like that. But yeah, so that's kind of the final there. And yeah, I don't know where else to go with that. So we're just going to go ahead and tone it out here. Abrupt ending, wasn't it? But yeah, all things must come to an end sometimes, and sometimes they are abrupt, like this episode.